It seems like as the years go on, we're becoming lazier as consumers because we have all of this new music at our fingertips and our attention spans keep shrinking and we're just spoiled by the technology that we have in front of us. But I came across this very interesting stat, and it was a study conducted by Music Match, and they found that the average length of songs on the Billboard Hot 100 fell from 3.8 minutes in 2000 to 3.42 minutes in 2018, marking a reduction of 10%. And there's sort of this appeal nowadays towards shorter albums, shorter songs, and the labels are even taking advantage of this too, where the shorter your song is, the more viral opportunity there is to upload a song on TikTok or whatever the case may be. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today, is some of the best music that we have in hip hop that fall under that 3 minute mark. And let me ask you this, like, how do you feel? What are the pros and the cons for you when it comes to the industry moving into making these quicker tracks?
I think it could be executed properly. Example, for the songs that I brought in today, and by the way, for the whole 3 minute mark, I still think if you have a song that's 2 minutes and 45 seconds, that it still plays on a good front and you're able to get a lot across. But to further my point, I have a lot of tracks on here that do exactly what they're supposed to do when it comes to writing, concept, production, just feeling and replay value. But that maybe even clock under 2 minutes. That's what I tried to do for myself, is I tried to bring in songs that are as short as possible, but that feel good, that are going to be able to actually live in your rotation. Because one sort of nitpick I do have with shorter music is that sometimes it leaves you wanting more. And I never want to listen to a track and be like, well, sheesh, I didn't get what I wanted, but this is quality, you know? Like, this is really good. This should have been a minute more, maybe add an extra verse, or maybe have the intro extend a bit longer. So
that's almost a good thing for me, because, like, if I hear a really short song that I want more out of, I'm maybe going to be more inclined to want to replay it constantly just to get that fix. But I see what you're saying. Like, sometimes you're like, fuck, this could have been extended, and we could have gotten an extra verse that could have made it from a good song to an amazing song.
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you, is that sometimes I do want more. But to further your point, I do feel like there is a mass appeal for shorter music nowadays. The amount of technology and content that is in front of our eyes is not only alarming, but there's a lot of competition, right? And this actually goes back to a tweet that I saw from our dear friend Barry Hefner. Shout out to Barry if you're somehow listening to this. And he was saying that now musicians are not only competing for Billboard charts, but they're also competing against podcasts. They're competing against content creators. They're competing against YouTubers. They're competing against television and all of these sorts of different media formats. So for people now, it's like, well, how do you compete against that? Let's shorten the songs. Let's make it more accessible, something that you could play over and over again. Not only that, but obviously we know how TikTok completely revolutionized the way people consume music. Like, if you ask maybe my little cousins, and I was actually at my cousin's birthday party yesterday. Shout out to Isaura. She just turned 30. I was talking to my little cousins, and, like, they're all showing me these songs that are under, like, 2 minutes. And they're enjoying it because it's easy for them to consume. It's easy to understand that. So do you feel like it's a situation now where you could relate more to the content and to the music that's in front of you with having that shorter runtime because there's less to digest?
Can I relate more to it? I mean, not really. I mean, there's not really much of a difference for me besides the fact that, you know, I like songs that can knock me out, put me under a spell, and before I'm out of that spell, the song's already over. Like, just being very efficient with your music, I think that's what that time marker does, is it tells an artist, okay, I'm going to get in, I'm going to do my job and get out. I'm not going to leave 30 seconds for an instrumental break, which is totally fine in certain situations.
I'm there for it, man.
I'm there for that, too.
Absolutely.
But just to say, like, it's all killer, no filler within the track, and I appreciate that. And listen, at the end of the day, I can't blame artists for sacrificing the art for the sales and to feed into the algorithm, because it's much easier to hold a listener's attention for 2 minutes than it is for 4 minutes nowadays.
Well, I do agree with you. I also disagree, because a lot of the material that I did bring into this session, I maybe have like 8 or 9 songs that I want to speak about today.
Yeah.
They're all killer. Like, realistically, I don't see a reason for an extra verse, or I don't see a reason to have extended production, because that's something I don't like too, is where you go into this 5 minute track and it's just completely overbaked and then it completely disengages you.
So which point do you disagree with me about?
I was going to say more about the engagement side of things. Because think about someone that's a younger listener, right? Like, when you overwhelm someone with too much content, let's say, or too much writing, or too much, let's say, art to a certain extent, what starts to happen is that there's a disconnect and the attention span starts to sort of diminish and they start to disconnect from the art, rather than, let's say, now for young kids, and this is proven now, listen, the attention spans are starting to go down. After your attention span is gone, you're not going to be as engaged as you once were. When you do have these songs that are underneath 2 minutes, it allows you to be able to understand the music maybe a bit better for a younger listener that necessarily didn't come up at the same time as you and I came up at.
Yeah, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, I just think the bottom line is that the shorter the song, the more likely you are to keep someone's attention for that runtime. But listen, let's talk about some music that does fall under that mark. Some mentions that I wanted to bring up that I just didn't bring in for a recommendations episode, simply because I've spoken about this music before. Mad Villainy, for instance. A lot of those songs fall under that 3 minute mark from MF Doom and Madlib. Also, the new Earl Sweatshirt and Alchemist album, Voir Dire. Big fan of that record. A lot of songs.
How's it been living with you over the weekend?
I've given it maybe 2-3 listens. I'm liking it so far. I'm not going to be an everyday spin for me, but I'm still enjoying it. Apart from that, the next episode by Dr. Dre, of course, classic. That's
How long
under
does
3
that
minutes.
Clock in?
It's like 2:50, I think. Earned by Childish Gambino off of Because the Internet. That's one that I really wanted to bring in, but it's not fully hip hop, so I said fuck it. But what about you? What's the first song that you decided to?
Okay, let's go to 2021, and this is a song that's extremely impressive by one of my favorite artists in the genre, and that kind of breaks the mold of what this album is supposed to be, and this is going to be Punching the Clock by J. Cole off of The Offseason. And what's interesting about this track, I think it only clocks in at like a minute 57, but what J. Cole is able to accomplish in his short but much-lived verse is absolutely incredible, because what's interesting is that, like, J. Cole is going through his verse, and you guys obviously probably know this song. I know you guys are all massive fan of it, but go back to it because it's the song with some of the most value for pound with writing that the album has to offer. I think it's a top tier song on the actual album itself, and people talk about maybe The Climb Back or you know, maybe other tracks on this album, but this is really a different type of value for me. But what's cool is that he's talking about punching the clock. He's talking about putting in the work to be able to fulfill his dreams and success, and it kind of reminds me a bit of like a Rise and Shine sort of vibe, or maybe a Sideline Story sort of vibe, but in a condensed 2021 format that I really do enjoy. And then you get this Mario Luciano and Tay B sort of production that feels like very psychedelic and hazy. It almost feels like you're going to work with J. Cole, where you're in this sort of like movie and he's moving around quickly around New York and he's getting in and he's punching the clock, and there's this sort of like rushed feeling to the concept of the song. And that's what I like about it. Not only does it play into the time itself, but it plays into the writing and the actual production. So I think it's a near flawless track. It's one that gets across perfectly. If you guys like lyricism, this is for you. And it's maybe the song that's one of the most overlooked on the entire album, especially when it comes to streams.
And let me ask you that, because I do think it is one of the more underrated tracks off The Offseason, but there is a better song that clocks under 3 minutes on The Offseason. That's Applying Pressure, which I know you're a huge fan of.
Yes,
as well.
Is.
So is that why you chose to bring this one in? Because it's a bit more slept
on? I've talked about Applying Pressure and how much I actually enjoy about it. I've never really gone into depth about why I enjoyed this song in particular. And I think that both of these songs have such a big part to play in the beginning of the tracklist and the way that it's sequenced, because it kind of gives you the mentality of where J. Cole is at and what type of progression he's in. And I just love to see that from an artist. So the fact that he was able to do it not only on this track, but another one with Applying Pressure. And Applying Pressure is a bit more bombastic. It's a bit more in your face, a bit more grandiose. This one kind of plays more into the theme for me. So while I was listening back to it for this audio episode, I'm like, oh, this would be something cool to bring in when I was going through my options. So apply Punching the Clock and Applying Pressure. I mean, go for both of them. But if you guys want to respin The Offseason, this is one that really plays in like that short condensed time, clocking underneath 2 minutes with just incredible concept and great production. So enjoy that for me.
All right, awesome. Yeah, my first recommendation is going to be from an artist that I feel like's been a little bit more out of the limelight in recent years, and that's going to be Xavier Wolf with his new song, First Light. Well, I shouldn't say new. It came out in 2022. This clocks in at 2 minutes, 11 seconds. Very concise. And I haven't always been the biggest Xavier Wolf fan, but I always remembered him for being an OG founding father of the SoundCloud scene, as well as being a member of Raider Clan. And I always loved his Pissy Pamper remix that he has out on streaming platform, which is also under 3 minutes. So I decided to like just go through his profile one day randomly. I'm like, let me check out on this guy. I feel like I haven't heard from him in a long time.
Yeah.
Go on his profile, see he had a new album that came out in 2022 called Bloodshore Season 3. And the intro is the one I'm going to be recommending. It's called First Light. And I was immediately, you know, pulled in by the song because you hear this sample that sounds like the same video game sample that X and Ski Mask used for Freddy versus Jason. So I'm not 100% sure if it is. I tried doing some research and I couldn't really find out. And that's a song that I absolutely love instrumentally. So that really hooked me in off the jump. And then you just have this ominous beat and you have Xavier Wolf rapping with these aggressive, quick flows, rapping about just his typical day. Him starting his day off at sunrise, lighting a spliff, bumping some old music, checking in at his mom's house.
Does it have that, like, that sort of like cloud rap aesthetic to it? It does. Where it feels very wavy.
And that's why I want to recommend it, is that it feels like an old SoundCloud trap banger. It really took me back to 2017, 2018 and that era. And I feel like he's someone that's really keeping that sound alive and doing it well still. And yeah, I just think that Xavier Wolf as a whole, there's even another couple of tracks off this album that are really fire. He's someone that should be on people's radar again. I really believe that. And this song is really one that can be captivated all the way through. And that's going to be sort of a similar sentiment where it's like the songs that I bring in today, they really keep me entertained from beginning to end.
They have to, though, right? Yeah. Because when you're spending such little time, like, imagine getting disengaged off of like a 2-minute song. That just means that you've done absolutely nothing with the little runtime that you've had. And that is very possible. There's some artists that do try to attack that short format, and it's just so underbaked, or there's just so minimal effort that's put into the track, and it just feels completely off-putting to, let's say, a track list. And that's something that I don't like about certain albums, is where, like, you know, if your album's going to have a certain sentiment to it, right? Like, make sure that the writing is fleshed out. So, example, for the off-season, you have major records on there with a lot of punch, but you do get certain songs that are shorter in runtime, like A Punch in the Clock, for example, or Applying Pressure, that do play into that concept of it feeling very grandiose, that could also stack up against the 95 South, but it's not sacrificing the quality or the narrative of the album, you know?
I think it just depends, you know, what the purpose of that track is. If you're just trying to make a club banger, something that people can have fun with, then that very condensed format can work better in your favor. If you're trying to make a storytelling song, it's going to be tough to get it that is. Across in 2 minutes.
Imagine like an I Gave You Power or a Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst being condensed into a 2-minute track. It's nearly impossible.
But you know what? There are some lyrically profound tracks that have a lot of substance that are under 3 minutes, and I'm going to get to some of those in my list.
I do have one
on.
By Kendrick Lamar that's underneath 2 minutes, actually.
Really? Okay.
Funny enough. Is it under 2 minutes? I think so. It's around there.
Untitled track?
No, it is not. Okay, I'll get to it soon. But the next one, I want to go to another Dreamville member, and this is one of my favorite songs from JID, and this is going to be 8701, and I felt like it would be absolutely criminal not to bring this in on some of the best rap music that's underneath that 3-minute mark. This clocks in at a minute 52, and what's interesting about the whole play on the 8701, this not only plays homage to Atlanta and the area code, but it actually plays into Usher's third studio album, 8701. And what's interesting, too, is that, well, it's not an area code for 8701. I think it's just like an Atlanta thing. But what's interesting about this track, too, is that it's JID and Black talking about their uprising and how they were able to get to the pinnacle of fame, and talking about their upbringing, their environment, but they do it with such ease and such charisma for only a minute and 50 seconds. And you get this really nice like guitar loop in the background from Childish Major that rings off throughout the entire production. Feels very breezy. Feels like a California type of production to a certain extent. And even if you don't want to get into the writing, what's interesting is that you could play this in so many different settings. This is a great aux song as well. I've played this in my car for people a bunch of different times. And it's always like, oh, what's that song? I'm like, well, it's off the Never Story. So if you guys have just gotten into JID with the Forever Story, please go back to the entire album. And you're also going to find other songs on this album just like this. But I love it too, because I've always found that Black and JID have this great duality in chemistry throughout even other pieces of work that they've worked on together, whether it be 8701 or other ones. So seeing their duality in chemistry is always a treat for me. And to be able to get so much value out of a minute and 50 seconds is just always impressive to me. So I felt like it would be criminal, once again, not to bring this
great
in.
Great chemistry. I have to say, I feel like Black did steal the show on that one. Like, that hook is just impeccable. And that's one of those songs that makes you feel like, wow, I wish Black rapped a little bit more, because he is really, when he gets into his melodic rapping bag, it's different.
But you get this sort of like short transition in the production when JID actually gets onto the second verse where he says, hey shit, it's like, as I reminisce, I'm doing well, yeah, buying with my 9, bitch, it ain't that smell, no.
Yeah, it's
and
fire.
The way that he has that sort of like rhyme scheme is so cool. Oh, no, it's so intricate.
He doesn't get carried.
Know?
Don't get me wrong. I just think that Black was like, you know, the showstopper on that one for me personally. But that's a great song and one of the standouts for sure off of the Never Story. But let me go on to another song that I wanted to bring in and talk about. And this is one that's always been one of my favorite Jay-Z songs. And it's going to be Dear Summer by Jay-Z and Memphis Bleek from 2005. Clocks in just under 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 53 seconds. And if you've been a longtime fan of Jay-Z and you've been following his career to a T, then you probably know the story behind this song. So this was a huge moment for hip-hop culture because this was Jay-Z's first solo song in 2 years after retiring from the game in 2003 with the Black Album. And what's crazy is that nobody expected Jay-Z to have a solo song on a Memphis Bleek album, nor for it to be the best song on the whole album.
Do you think it's one of his most underrated performances of all time?
Absolutely, bro.
Weren't we bumping the song in New York, actually?
I was playing it in, was it New York? I think New York and Miami. I played it, because I've been kicking this song all fucking summer long.
Yeah, it's a summer anthem.
It's a summer anthem for sure. And, you know, to answer your question, yeah, I do think it's one of Jay-Z's best performances just because of the rich use of metaphor where he's talking to the rap game for the entirety of the track, but he's disguising it as a metaphor for summer, where he's rapping about, like, me and Summer have been together for 8 summers long. I miss Summer. And it's just him reminiscing over his dominance in the game. And he goes even over, like, certain regrets or things that he wish he could have accomplished while he was still in the rap game, talking about wishing he could have won a Pulitzer Prize. And then, you know, about 10 years later, what do you know, Kendrick Lamar ends up being the first rapper to win that. But just to say, I think that his cocky demeanor, his insane wordplay, it's all flawlessly executed. I love the very clever jab towards Lance Rivera. The Just Blaze production is absolutely beautiful. You have this amazing soul sample flip that Jay-Z really just glides over beautifully. And no offense, you know, to Memphis, but to me, it's always been crazy that the best song on his album and the most streamed song in his catalog is not even his song, but his name is attached to it.
Of course, why not? Give him the W. Yeah, listen, man, like, that song is just absolutely legendary, and that's actually going to go into my next song, which is actually going to be Friend or Foe off of Reasonable Doubt.
So before you go into it, Friend or Foe is another option. Also, Public Service Announcement.
Yes.
Also under 3 minutes.
So you could go into a whole rant about short Jay-Z songs, but what's interesting about Friend or Foe is that it's kind of like the least spoken about out of maybe like Jay-Z's shorter song catalog, and there's this crazy like back and forth between Jay-Z and a fictional character that reaches out to it. And we were just speaking about songs that have such richness for such amount, like a short amount of runtime. This is the pinnacle of that for me. And not only that, but you're getting Jay-Z on a DJ Premier beat, which is absolutely fucking legendary. So it's always been one of my favorite off of Reasonable Doubt. But yeah, I mean, what's interesting about Jay-Z is that he is so punctual with the amount of killer that he puts into his rhymes that it's so rare to find filler bars from him. It's so, you know, rare to find him, you know, delivering bars or let's say certain verses that don't necessarily fit the vibe of the track. And still to this day in his career, he's delivering some of his best verses. He's coming through and he's absolutely killing it with certain tracks. And even going back to something like 444, just to kind of go a bit off topic, like I was going back through those verses and I'm like, they're not the longest Jay-Z verses.
No.
But
there's two verses instead of three.
Exactly, but they're extremely methodical. They're shorter in runtime, but it feels like you're having these mini conversations with Jay-Z, and that's maybe what Friend or Foe could feel like, but on the entertainment value. And if you guys want to know a bit more about the strong structure, it's only one verse which you guys might really enjoy, and there's a cool backstory behind the song that you guys might want to go back to and, you know, read through on Genius. I don't want to spoil the song for you. But yeah, definitely one of the best off of Reasonable Doubt, and it has like the least like runtime out of everything else on the album. So
yeah, I mean, honestly, we just mentioned, I think, two of Jay-Z's best written songs. You know, you have one where you have this world building and these characters created, and the other one where it's Jay-Z's ultimate farewell song to the game, to a point where it's like when that dropped, people didn't know if that was going to be the last time he ever laid down a verse. So Crazy moment there, but I'm looking at this 444 track since you brought it up, and Kill Jay-Z is under 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Bam is not. That's 4 minutes.
How about Marcy Me?
Moonlight is under three. Marcy Me, fuck. Marcy Me is also under 3 minutes, but I don't regret it because we've spoken about 444 at length.
But I'm just saying is that if you guys want a collection of good short Jay-Z songs...
Jay-Z's the artist to go to,
yeah,
apparently.
Absolutely. Because you're going to find so much good writing, and he's so meditative with his writing and just kicks so much knowledge, and he doesn't need the runtime. That was going back to my whole conversation with rappers trying to overbake their shit. You don't need to do that. You know, when you hear the lyrical miracle stuff, like, okay, it's cool, but... You know, give me clear streams of consciousness. Give me stuff that I'm going to be able to live with. I don't want to have to go through a song and try to decipher what you're saying at each and every single bar for fucking 7 minutes straight, right? It becomes more homework than an enjoyable listen. So I wanted to bring in Friend or Foe for today.
All right. So my next one is going to be way more underground. It's going to be Good Bagels by Raz Fresco. Came out in 2022, produced by Nicholas Craven. And I literally found this song... I was spinning just some more lyrical hip-hop, some Boldy James, some J Grams, and I was out of my queue or whatever it was, and I got a random Spotify recommendation, started listening, started vibing. Then I go look at the art cover. Look at the album art to this. What do you see? Tell people what you see right here.
St. Viateur Bagel, baby.
St. Viateur Bagel Shop, a cornerstone from Montreal culture.
A place
and
where I worked at for many years.
Absolutely. So they have an album together called Boulangerie. Which is
it's so interesting that they chose that, because Nick Craven's attached to the project, correct?
Yeah, and he's from Montreal. Raz Fresco was from Toronto, though.
But is Nick Craven actually from Montreal?
He's born and raised Montreal.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting, because I always, I was speaking to someone, he's like, well, is he from the outskirts? And I'm like, well, I never really...
No, he's from the city.
He is honestly someone I would absolutely adore to have on the podcast Montreal culture.
We definitely got to tap in with Nick. He's super talented, and he's making a lot of great moves right now, career-wise. But yeah, I was obviously grabbed by this track, because it's not every day that you have Montreal culture being explored in a hip-hop song, especially one of this quality. And what's cool is that Raz is rapping about literally a typical day in Montreal, and that's why I related to it so much, is that, you know, he's rapping about getting a cream cheese bagel at this bagel shop that we were talking about. He's rapping about hitting the SQDC, which is our weed shop in the city that the government runs. He's rapping about how hard it could be to light a spliff when it's like minus 12 outside. So just a lot of Montreal pop culture stirred into a nice soup here. And the whole album is actually really fire and has these really refined songs like Eyes of the Sun, which is also on here. And I just really like Raz Fresco's rhyming style and approach, because the way that the production is mixed is that the beat is at the forefront and he's sort of directly underneath, and he sort of has to punch through the beat to really get his thoughts and his streams of consciousness across. And I love that sonic choice of him having to really punch through all these elements sonically, and it creates for a very unorthodox flow that I absolutely love. And like I said, as a Montrealer, I love hearing about my culture.
Yeah, I love what Nick's doing for Montreal as well, just because it's so nice to see people from your city winning and being able to put on and, you know, create an own movement within it. Even Mike Shabbs, shout out to him as well. Like, you know, Montreal legends, man. Like, what they're doing is fucking incredible. Mike Shabbs has had one of the greatest evolutions I've seen from the city.
Yeah.
If you know where Mike Shabbs where he was with his music before and where he's at now, the improvement is absolutely incredible. Like, just making these loops and these soul samples ring, and it's just, wow, this is top tier hip hop production that doesn't even make sense. Actually, Troy was in the studio with Nick Craven at the Genius Studio here in Montreal, and he was just saying how talented of a producer he is when it comes to the sample loops. Like, you don't even need drums, man. Like, just like the way that they chop up samples is so sick and is just so well calculated. I love what they're doing. So
and at the end of the day, I just love it, because it's just, it shows that their strength and unity, like, even how much it helped, you know, Shabba's career once he linked up with Craven, and maybe the different direction that he helped him gear into. It's just been beautiful to see, and I can't wait to see how far they take it, because even getting a placement on the West Side Gun album for Mike, that was... It was massive.
It was monumental. There's really massive, no one doing that in the city. So shout out to the Montreal boys. Always nice to see Montreal boys winning. But all right, let me go into my next one. This is going to be a lot more mainstream, if I could say that the least. But one of the modern Playboi Carti songs that I actually feel has a lot of value, and this is going to be New Neon off of Whole Lotta Red. This is a song that has actually aged super well with me, just because I'm a big fan of the Molly Ron production. And at first, when I was listening to this album, New Neon, I didn't necessarily like Hardy's Flora cadence on it. But as I was listening to it more and more, I feel like it is one of the better songs off A Whole Lot of Red. You have this sort of like video game-esque Pierre Bourne type beat that comes through from Molly Raw that automatically engages me, at least throughout the track list. And when you want hype energy from Playboi Carti, this might be the perfect song for you. Clocks in at under 2 minutes as well, so super short for the album. And it's one of those songs that I feel like does age well with you if you are a fan of this type of Playboi Carti aesthetic. And you guys know how I feel about the entire album. I do feel like it's overrated. I don't like a lot of songs on here. I do feel like there is bloat, but these are one of the songs that I have to give credit to because I do appreciate it for what it is. Not only that, but there's a cool backstory to this because I believe it was the fourth collaboration between Molly Raw and Playboi Carti. If you go back to, let's say, songs like Of Course We Ghetto Flowers or etc., they have been working together since the beginning of Playboi Carti's career, or at least since he started to get placements. And it's just been interesting to see the way that their chemistry has developed because Molly Raw is more in tune with, let's say, Uzi's career rather than, let's say, Playboy's. But whenever they come together, their aesthetic mixes perfectly. So I saw you give me the oof face. Why don't you like it?
Honestly, I don't think it's one of the worst songs on the album. I just don't think it's one of the standouts for me personally. It's not one of those ones that's warmed up to me over time. But at the end of the day, like, every time that I say there's a song from Whole Lot of Red that I don't enjoy, I end up getting flamed. And I'm here for it. But it's just crazy to me that there's not a single song that won't get defended on this 24-song album. It's crazy. I love it.
What do you think it is? How do you think it's actually aged with, let's say, the new listeners and like going through it, you know?
I think that it just created this resurgence of hype energy for the mainstream where you have kids fucking going crazy in their fucking, you know, I don't know if you saw the viral videos of like kids in their high school bathrooms, bro, just like junking this with a fucking speaker and like jumping on top of the sinks and just going, like, I just think it created this punk and rebellious energy that was maybe missing from the mainstream for a while, and it really changed the culture in that way, especially for the festival settings as well. And I think people really got behind the movement of the music.
That's very true. I do feel like it's a big soundtrack for a lot of younger kids' lives.
Yeah, it is, bro.
People wanted that breath of fresh air. They wanted that brash energy, especially in 2020 when like the moods were low. People were at an all-time low in 2020 with COVID, and like being able to drop such a daring album, you know, I don't enjoy it all that much, but you have to respect what that album has done for hip-hop. It kind of like carried a whole new generation of listeners into a next phase, right?
And absolutely,
I think it's gonna be so hard to replicate that with the next album.
It's
hard, man.
It is,
because think about how culturally important that album is to now these new young listeners.
I think he's gonna follow suit and give us something similar to A Whole Lot of Red. And mind you, he's never really duplicated an album, so maybe not, but I think it will be within that same vein of rebellious, hardcore, rocker type of energy. But let me go on my next recommendation. This one is going to be Shine by Amine. Came out in 2018. This runs in at 2 minutes 30 seconds, and this is off of my second favorite Amine album, which is 1.5. And I feel like there's a lot of songs that get a lot of praise on there, like Dr. Whoever or Reel It In or Blackjack, and I love those songs, but where's the love for Shine? And I remember first listening to this song and being mind blown, because I was like, holy fuck, like, he could sing in this high of a register. I was really surprised. I was taken aback, and he hits the highest pitch he's ever attempted and absolutely nails it, and then goes into his rapping bag. And I just absolutely love the writing on this track, because he's rapping about the beauty of his own insanity and about embracing his own imperfections. Like, he starts the verse off rapping, "I fuck up every day, I fuck up in every way," and then adds some humor into it by saying, like, he fucks up when he pulls up to Chick-fil-A on a Sunday, for example. And it's just, it's one of those songs that has that catchiness, that, you know, that very earworm ability, but it also gets super deep and super honest from Amine. And that's what I love, is just the balance that he brings to his tracks, where they can be super deep, but they could also be very thoughtful but fun. And I love the song structure. I love the duality of Amine going from singing on the hook to rapping on the verses. And I think it's a fitting time to listen to this song also at the end of summer, as he addresses sort of turning a new leaf and whatnot. So one of the more underrated Amine songs, and have to put you guys on.
We have to do an episode on the best fall-time music. That's something that I maybe want to do in the near future. That could be super
nice. I don't know. I feel like it's a bit tough to, like, put your finger on, like, this is a fall song versus, like, a winter song. Like, you know what a winter song sounds like a bit more.
Well, the fall songs have a bit more of, like, a nocturnal vibe. It's sort of, like, hoodie weather sort of vibes. Yeah. Like, but it still has a sort of somberness to it. Whereas if, let's say, winter music is a lot colder, it feels a lot more maybe aggressive at certain times. So, all right, let me continue going on with this. And this is going to bring me to my Kendrick Lamar track. This is going to be Chapter 10 off of Section 80. And this is actually my favorite interlude of all time, at least one of them.
Nice.
And what's interesting about this track is that it's actually extremely short. It only clocks in at like a minute and 10 seconds. But the value that you get from this passage is absolutely incredible. So I could actually read you guys out this verse and it wouldn't take up too much runtime on this podcast. So babies from 80s don't know no better. Don't nothing go better with ignorance but the belligerence. Kids that we living with, some of them masculine, some of them feminine. Maybe the universe used to be innocent, now they just look at us like crazy immigrants. Every day that I wake up, I'm a sin again. I'm not a citizen, I'm just a from Section 80. And I just love that passage and that type of like writing from Kendrick Lamar, because it kind of stands for everything that he's sort of done into his career and like how beautiful like he's kind of like written out his tracks. And you get this incredible instrumental from Iman Omari and THC, which were big contributors to this album as well, and just incredible. And then what's interesting is that it also follows suit with the rest of the track list, so you could go through it and just have so much fun with it. But do you like this interlude, man?
I do like the interlude. I think it's one of those many songs off that album that really tie it full circle and make it feel complete as a story. So definitely a great one. But let me move on now to a song I've been really wanting to talk about, and it's Bad News by Blue and Real Bad Men. And this just came out off of an album of the same name. Song clocks in at 2 minutes and 4 seconds, and what's interesting, and by the way, I really suggest you listen to this album. It's I think it's a lock for my top 10 of the year at this point. So Blue is one of my favorite rappers to ever come out, and I know him to be rapping over more of those soul-inspired instrumentals with someone like an Exile, and this totally turns the page over. And what's interesting is that his link up with Real Bad Man is unlike anything I've ever heard him rap over before, because you're getting these sparse, sinister elements over the production, and it sort of sounds like he's rapping over some MF Doom type beats. It's way darker, it's a bit grittier. And by the way, I wanted to recommend the intro, but a lot of these songs are under 3 minutes, which is really interesting. But from the first line of the song, you could tell that he is talking his fucking shit. Like, oftentimes, Blue will give you some socially conscious bars or some really personal and honest material. But on this album and this song in particular, he's just proving to be one of the best in the game. And listen to the setup bars and the multisyllabic pattern that he starts the song off with. I smoke a marijuana leaf when I want to think and drink, 40 water like it's coming out the sink, keep pouring, hit a four-pointer from the corner and keep scoring, give an encore performance every city we touring. Like, he's rapping literally every word with each other, and it's one of the best rapping performances you'll hear in 2023. The production sounds like some old mafioso score with these cinematic strings, these mean horns, some steady snares. It's fucking fantastic. And like I said, this is Blue on I'm the GOAT kind of vibe. Like, he's not fucking around. Some of the best pure rapping you'll hear this year, and it really deserved a shout. So don't be surprised if I mention this song and album once again.
When did this release, by the way?
It released like last week or the week before, bro. It's super brand new.
It's super brand new, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Great,
but okay.
Fucking listen.
Let me get on to another track. This is a track that I absolutely adore, and I have been playing this song since this came out. This is going to be Distance off of the Beast Coast album, and one that I spoke about maybe that I mentioned briefly in another episode, but I kind of want to expand on this one because it is one of my favorite shorter tracks. Only clocks in at around 2 minutes and 10 seconds, so all killer, no filler, and you go through and you have three fantastic verses from Eric the Architect, Izza Gold, and Joey Badass. And Joey starts off with this super triumphant verse, and it's just one of those like victory lap type of tracks. And this is one of the songs that I wish was longer, just because I'm in absolute awe of how good this instrumental is. And I believe it was actually produced by Powers Pleasant, a legend in the game, one of my favorite producers to ever do it. And this is what modern New York hip hop means to me, if I'm being completely honest with you. Just so much value, so much fantastic stuff from all three artists. You get Izza Gold on the second verse, and I love the whole part. She's trying to fuck, make her lock her knees, can't hear you talk, I speak Guapanese.
Yeah.
That was the first time I ever heard that one, and I was like, wow, that's crazy. And I won't mention his name, but I knew someone that actually wanted to tattoo that word Guapanese on himself, which would be absolutely ridiculous.
She should have told me that after this episode wraps up. What the fuck?
And you know him very well, Lou. But okay. Going on, even at that, the way that Eric comes in saying, I'm going to need more than a 20 at least, grew from the slum, now we repping the beast. The way that he actually attacks that flow is so dirty. And all three of them have absolute incredible chemistry. And one of my favorite songs to play on the aux in the car, I think if you go back to my 2019 replay for Apple Music, this was my top song that was actually played this year. So clocks in at 2 minutes 10 seconds. Again, another song that I feel like I would be absolutely jipping you guys if I didn't bring into this episode to talk about further. Incredible production by Powers Pleasant, has this very triumphant feeling to it. You guys are going to enjoy it. So that's my next recommendation.
Yeah, I love that album as a whole. Do you think we ever get another Beast Coast or Pro Era album? Or
I wish. I wish. I was listening to that Capital C's album you told me to listen to, and it's just incredible from start to finish.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, bro.
It's crazy.
But yeah, let me move on with another song that I wanted to talk about from the man himself, Freddie Gibbs.
All right, there we go.
And this is Thug Till It's Over, Freddie Gibbs and Cookin' Soul. Came out in 2021. Clocks in at 2 minutes, 9 seconds. And, Lies, you know the fucking deal by now. When it comes to Freddie, he's built up that reputation of never missing. Not on an album, not on a single, not on a fucking feature. And, of course, this is the case with this song. And, first of all, the production is very refreshing if you're a Freddie listener, because you have this dreamy summertime, almost G-funk reminiscent production, which is accompanied by some moody guitar strings, a groovy bass line, and it's very soulful, it's very chill. And what's cool is that as soon as the song starts, like fucking 2 or 3 seconds in, immediately Freddie is coming in with this aggressive energy, these menacing flows, and this song is incredible because, you know, like he usually does, Freddie is rapping about his life as a drug dealer, but in vivid detail, getting into how he's moving drugs from state to state, how he's popping someone at point blank range and getting blood on his Air Maxes. Like, he's really giving you the essence of the type of person that he's portraying at its core. And what's cool too is that he reaches a point in the song where the purpose of the song is him asking for the Lord's forgiveness until he ultimately comes to a realization where he realizes, like, he is too deep in to ever step away. And it's just that maturity and that frame of mind that he is. It goes beyond your usual street talk. It goes beyond your usual drill song. And some of Freddie's most ironically poetic lines ever on here, like, for example, killing through the night, I hope I live to see the sunshine. Like, just A1 shit for Freddie, bro. A1 stuff.
Well, listen, I have a Freddie Gibbs song as well. Thought I'd go to Fetty because it is a shorter album and runtime, and I wanted to bring in Willie Lloyd, nice. One of my favorite ever Freddie Gibbs solo songs, a song that actually got me really interested in Freddie's career when I was 18 years old, and just something that really intrigued me as a whole. So if you guys are not familiar with Willie Lloyd, he was a notorious drug dealer back in Chicago, and that's basically the basis of the entire song, is just Freddie Gibbs boasting about, let's say, the drug life and glorifying it, kind of like your track to a certain extent. But I think the highlight of this is Prime Alchemist and Freddie coming together. So I love what they're able to do here. You get this extremely haunting and dark beat from the Alchemist that kind of puts you in a very vicious and dark mindset. And then you get Freddie Gibbs coming at you with these extremely quick and well-developed flows, because it's only one verse. And when you go through the entire song, it's just an exhilarating ride. It feels like you're a drug dealer in that car seat, just going through the night and having that sort of vicious mode on you. And it's a track that's one of my favorite off of Fetty. I think it's the only solo track from Freddie off of Fetty, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe I could go back and check the rest of the track list out. But this song's like Location Remote. I could go through all kinds of different tracks off of this album, and you guys will absolutely adore it. But yes, this is one of my favorite tracks from 2018. Willie Lloyd is a standout for me on this project.
Fucking and Freddie, man. Like, more and more, he just keeps convincing me that, you know, he's going to be high up in my all-time list.
You think so?
I really think so, bro.
Would you have him in your top 50?
Absolutely. Top 50 for sure.
He's incredible.
I think maybe it's top 30. Top 30 might be a reach, but like he's really there, bro.
He is really up there.
He is really, really up there. But let me move on to my next recommendation. And this is going to be Ice Cold Zell Freestyle by Denzel Curry and Ice Cold Bishop. Another 2023 song. Very short one. Clocks in at 1:39. And I also really wanted to include Once Upon a Time Freestyle by Denzel and IDK. But I feel like that one's a bit more well-known, and it's a bit older, so I went for Ice Cold Zell.
Well, another thing is that I'm not going to go through this track completely, but maybe another recommendation I was thinking about bringing in was Layup off of the Unlocked album.
Yeah.
That clocks in at only, I think, like 1:30.
Same situation for that project as a whole, super short songs. But yeah, when it comes to Ice Cold Zell Freestyle, I feel like this gives me a style of, you know, a style of rap that is forgotten, where you're literally getting this call and response, back and forth rhyming, where Zell and Ice Cold Bishop are literally finishing each other's lines, bro. It's not like it's three bars, four bars. No, it's like one line after the next. They're talking to each other as they're rapping. It's the definition of high energy hip hop to its, you know, finest degree. And you have Foster, who produced this song, that production wise, it sounds like you're at a graveyard. The atmosphere feels quiet,
incredible,
intense. And you're getting these hard-hitting drums once the vocals come in. And it's just one big verse where they display crazy chemistry. And I think Ice Cold gets the edge slightly, even though Denzel is a crazy bar that he ends up with double entendre-wise. But what a fucking refresher for hip-hop. I wish more artists made tracks like this.
Very interesting. Okay, let me go on to my last recommendation for the episode, and this is going to be going to a Static Selector record that I actually suggest you guys go through full. It's called The Balancing Act. I maybe brought this into another recommendation, just the album, but I never actually went into the song that I enjoy the most off of this project, and it's actually called Time with Jack Harlow. And you're getting this classic boom bap Static Selector production. And yes, while I do give Jack Harlow some flack for previous projects and maybe rapping performances, I don't like that all that much. This is the perfect Jack Harlow you could possibly get. Super meditative, super calculated in flow and approach, super smooth throughout the entire project. And basically, he's talking about the concept of time and all the things that he feels like he's losing out on with the progression of time. So whether that means, you know, not meeting the love of his life in time just because of how busy he is, or maybe, you know, him losing his life to climate change or the pandemic at the time, because this came out in November of 2020. So it was very cool to see how this track aged at a time where we were all worried for our lives and worried about what would happen in the near future.
Yeah.
And, you know, even rhymes like, at times I feel like it's the end times. I feel like I'm not going to get everything I want in time, but will it be in time? A pandemic and climate change at the same time doesn't make you feel like everything's fine. Quite the opposite. And, you know, I don't give Jack Harlow, you know, credit for his lyricism, but when you're getting bars like that, it's like, hey, man, that's fire.
Yeah,
like,
it's still written like very simple. Like, the language is always simple with Jack, but at least he's giving you some substance.
But listen to this. I'm a skeptic, but I'm still quite the optimist. I'm going to try to stay that way till I do not exist. I'm hoping for some more time. In fact, a lot of it. Crazy. Why not? You know,
it's
some fire shit. Like, and that's the thing is that I love simple writing like that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of it just because, you know, I don't need to listen to Lupe Fiasco on repeat for 24/7. You know, to
be
able to
go,
oh, I'm a big hip hop connoisseur and I just listen to Mural every day.
No, but just to say, I think that Drake is the true artist that has mastered the simplistic writing, where like he could be saying so much by refining it and not saying much. I feel like Jack is trying to emulate that writing style, and he's not quite up to that.
No, he's obviously not there.
Yeah, just to say.
No, he's not there. But
by the way, since you mentioned a short Jack Harlow song, Mockingbird Valley off the DJ Drama album is another one. 2:30.
Because when you don't want to hear
really
Jack
good.
Harlow go on for 7 minutes.
Never.
You know, who wants to hear Jack Harlow go on for 7 minutes? But these types of tracks where they're short, they're concise, they're the point, Nothing too crazy, but just super replayable stuff that you want to play in your whip. I was bumping this song the entire summer, and maybe one of my most played songs this year, actually. Just enjoy, guys. So
absolutely.
That's going to be my last recommendation of today. Lou, anything else?
I'll do one more, and I'm going to do Code Red by J-Rock, which dropped in 2011. Mm. One of my favorite songs off of Follow Me Home, his debut album. This clocks in at 2 minutes 45 seconds. And a lot of people talk about, you know, Hood Gone Lovin' when it comes to this album, but this song is great because J-Rock is really trying to show off his street cred on this song. And I know this might be a weird comparison, but if you listen to the production and how the bass is boosted, it's very reminiscent of a Dr. Dre beat. And when you listen to J-Rock's delivery and his rhythmic timing, it feels like a song that could have been on the Game's documentary. Like,
oh, that's interesting.
That's the best way that I can recommend it to someone. That if you're a big fan of the highlights off of the documentary.
So very grandiose West Coast hip-hop.
Grandiose, hard-hitting, very bass-heavy. And yeah, what's interesting too is that not a lot of people know this because he's not credited, but Kendrick Lamar is actually doing the hook on this song.
That's very interesting.
And it's cool because he's doing like the spoken word type of thing, which adds to the world building going around about like, welcome to Watts, California. Like, this is what you could expect once you step into my hood. And Kendrick almost sounds a bit like Snoop Dogg. Like, his voice just sounds super smooth, which is super
kind of a similar flow, too?
Yeah, bro. Very patient and, like, easygoing flow.
Who produced the song, by the way, if you have it?
Produced the song? That's a good question. Let me go check that out.
Check that out, because that's maybe a producer that we might know of or that
it
probably
could
sounds
be. I don't think it was someone that had a super familiar name, but let's check it out real quick. Maybe I'm
check
wrong.
Check that Genius page.
Okay, so I have to go on Genius because Spotify is slacking on it. But
I'll never go to Spotify for credits. That's like criminal. You'll always find it on Genius. You know, Tidal is actually the best for that.
They are the best for it, yeah.
Tidal is the best for it. Let's, but okay, what do you got?
Code Red. Who produced it?
J-Rock. That 2011 J-Rock was so different. So Rock, sick to bro. Go through. Loki got me in love with West Coast hip hop.
Phonics Beats. Okay, I know Phonics Beats. He's a legend. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
He's
that's
done,
what I'm trying
he's
to say.
No
is
role
like,
models. Some good stuff for Bryson Tiller. Yeah.
That's it. I figured. If it probably sounds super triumphant and something that, you know, sounds like out of the documentary, it's so hard to find a producer to replicate that sort
but
of
yeah,
stuff.
But yeah, he's
know?
Just a great song. He's claiming his allegiance to the red and just the urgency of the rhymes. I know why it's called Code Red. It feels like an alarm is ringing off. It feels like he's rapping for his life on this track. And again, if you're a fan of that old TDE era, that classic TDE era, don't look any further than that. But yeah, it's gonna sum up the episode for today. And I always love doing these episodes because you get to sort of put yourself in a box and sort of look at like, okay, if I'm looking for this type of record, this is where I have to go.
This is where I'm going with it. I agree with you. And it's always fun to do research for these types of episodes because sometimes you might not even realize that a certain song fits the box. Like, I was going through it and I'm like, it's true. Friend or Foe is super short and there's just so much to it. And you would never think, right? And then you get to go through all kinds of old articles and pull stuff out and listen to what's the best and also do your curation thing. So, guys, let us know in the comment sections. How do you guys like Lou and I's recommendations for today? We brought in some more mainstream stuff. We brought in some classics, some underground stuff, and just a bunch of different music you guys could be adding to your rotation. And if you guys are enjoying the audio experience, please, rate us 5 stars. It's always appreciated. And if you guys are not following, whether it's on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever else you guys access your audio experience or podcasts, please consider hitting that follow button because we are doing these episodes every single Tuesday. And sometimes the schedule changes if we have like a special episode, like for a previous one that we just did. But Lou, any final words?
As always, guys, much love. Thank you for listening. And don't forget about the longer tracks out there. They still deserve their love.
Yeah, when do you think we're going to drop that episode?
Yeah, we should do that. Like maybe like 7 minute plus or like some shit like that.
That's
a good idea.
The only thing is, what, you're going to bring in like Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst and stuff like that?
No, there's other places to go, bro. There's other places. We're culture enough to bring in some heat. But yeah, guys, as always, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being part of the NFR movement. We appreciate you. We love you. We'll catch you next Tuesday. Peace.